cause number 13210001CB LLC Inc. and Fun Holdings LLC versus Glenn Hagar, Comptroller of Public Accounts of the State of Texas, and Ken Paxton, Attorney General of the State of Texas.
May it please court, my name is Brian Bishop. I'm the attorney who represents the plaintiffs and the appellants in this lawsuit, LLC Inc. and Fun Holdings LLC. These are two businesses in Austin who operate gentlemen's clubs. They meet the definition of a sexually oriented business according to the Texas Sexually Oriented Business or SOB statute, which is Texas Business and Commerce Code section 102.052 and 105.053. The controller is charged with the responsibility under the SOB statute for collecting SOB fees. The statute assesses the fees and sets forth the formula for calculating the SOB fees that SOBs are required to pay to the state. The calculation is based upon the number of patrons that enter the club, and the fee is set at $5 per patron. For a number of years prior to the filing of this lawsuit, both the appellants had paid the SOB tax to the controller, and the controller had, in fact, issued notices of taxes, of SOB taxes or fees dues for prior assessment periods. In 2020, the Texas Entertainment Association, which is a trade group representing a number of similar gentlemen's clubs across Texas, filed a lawsuit challenging both the constitutionality of the SOB statute and the as-applied enforcement interpretation of the SOB statute by the controller. One of the arguments made was that the controller was violating equal protection under the federal constitution in enforcing and collecting the taxes from gentlemen's clubs, but not at the same time enforcing and collecting and requiring other businesses who also provided live nude entertainment as defined by the statute to pay the SOB fee.
Let me interrupt you. Are you referring to the case that was just decided in August by the Fifth Circuit, the TDA
yes.
versus Speaker? Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, or, you know, whether that is just, you know, right on point into what we're doing. How do you distinguish that? Because in that case, I really was going to ask the state, how do they, because in that case, they ruled in favor of the TEA and against the state of Texas. So I guess are you saying that case is applicable, Mr.
Well, I'm saying that shows that we have a legitimate, valid, good faith basis for making that argument. We're making the same argument as a basis for challenging our liability for the SOB tax for these relevant periods that are subject to the suit, based on the same arguments that the district court in the TEA v. Hager case agreed with and granted summary judgment at that time. Now, you are correct that the district court ruled in favor of TEA on all of the arguments made at the district court level. The Fifth Circuit, about a month ago, issued a decision which affirmed the district court's decision that the SOB rule or interpretation of the rule that the controller relies upon is unconstitutional. The Fifth Circuit, though, reversed the summary judgment holding as to equal protection. I want to make sure that, disclosed that. The controller has filed a motion for rehearing and a motion, I believe, for en banc reconsideration, so that the Fifth Circuit's decision is not final as of today. But it was the same equal protection argument that TEA made in that case, the district court agreed with, that is the basis of this challenge to recover the SOB fees paid in this case.
Now, I have a question, Mr. Bishop, regarding the statute, the SOB fee that is required to be paid. As you know, a big part of the state's argument here, which you will be addressing, is that there was no assessment. But once a business is classified as a SOB, terrible acronyms, but then the statute alone, once they know that, then they are required to submit this fee on their own, correctly? The agency is not going to send, the comptroller is not going to send a bill or anything like that on a regular basis. Is that correct? They fall under the statute and they're required to pay it. And if they don't pay it, then there's going to be consequences.
Right. Under the statute, under section 102.052 of the SOB statute, a fee is imposed on an SOB in an amount equal to $5 for each entry. That is the assessment. The state of Texas imposed and assessed that tax. The controller really doesn't assess taxes. The controller calculates taxes. Where there's a disagreement or refusal on the part of the taxpayer to voluntarily comply. In addition to that, the statute said under 102.053 says that each SOB business is required every quarter to remit the fee imposed to the comptroller. So that is the assessment. It's like arguing that I'm not liable for income tax because the IRS has not sent me a bill. The only time the IRS or the controller sends a bill or does a notice of taxes due is when the taxpayer refused to pay the taxes. We didn't do that in this case. We paid the tax, but under protest, and we followed the procedure set forth.
Well, let's talk about the two methods that you set out in your why am I going blank in your demonstrative exhibit here? Because you've said that in your briefs as well, that there are these two methods, then there's actually three, but there's two that are really applicable here that you are entitled to undergo. And the state seems to be suggesting that you should have first gone under 111.104. Now, do you have the choice to go one or the other, or is there some prerequisite to going under one or the other?
We have the choice of pursuing either the administrative route, which involves filing an administrative claim to the controller, which then gets referred to SOA for determination. But we didn't do that in this case because it takes about a year or so. Ultimately, the decision ends up being the controller's decision anyway. The SOA we can file a petition for redetermination that gets referred to SOA. SOA can issue its proposal for decision that says the taxpayer wins, but that's not binding on the controller. The controller takes the PFD and issues a final order. And in SOB cases, the controller has a history of rejecting the controller, the SOA's PFD when the SOA finds in front of the SOB, in favor of the SOB taxpayer. And so we didn't do that. There wasn't any way in the world in this case that the controller was going to agree that its enforcement of the SOB fee against us, but not against other businesses providing live nude entertainment, was unconstitutional. They were never going to agree to that. So we avoided the expense and the delay and proceeded through the direct to the district court or the protest payment route under Chapter 112. Under Chapter 112, the jurisdictional basis are that we are required to pay a tax that the controller collects. We're required to pay the tax under the SOB statute, and the controller collects the tax under the SOB statute. We are required, in order for the district court to have jurisdiction, to pay that tax under protest and to submit a protest letter that complies with Section 112.051. We did that. The argument that the only thing we can do, the only remedy that we have, is to go through the administrative route and SOA is disingenuous. I mean, if that were true, then Chapter 112 has no meaning and has no purpose under the tax code. And that's just simply not true.
So 112.052 refers back to 112.051, which says if a person is required to pay a tax imposed by the title or collected by the controller under any law, so you fall in there for sure, contends that the tax is unlawful or that the public official charged with collecting the tax may not legally demand or collect the tax. So what you're saying here is that it has not been applied, I guess, fairly, because there are other businesses that you say should be taxed that are not. So does that make it unlawful, or how do you fall into that?
Well, because they cannot collect the tax from us at the same time they don't collect, and in fact refuse to collect the same tax from taxpayers who are also responsible for paying the tax according to the definition of the SOB statute. In fact, in 2020, the summary judgment that the district court, the federal district court, rendered enjoined the controller from collecting this tax from taxpayers in my client's classification during the relevant assessment period. So under the federal district court's ruling as of 2020, when this lawsuit was filed and when it was pending, the controller was actually enjoined from collecting this tax from the appellants in this case. Now, of course, the appeal of that decision stayed the enforcement in the injunction, so we were not in a position where we could seek enforcement or contempt of the federal court injunction. But that is what the district court said, and that is our argument in this case, that's yet to be determined on the merits. Can they collect a tax against one category of taxpayers, but not against a similar situated group of taxpayers? No, they can't do that because doing so violates the Equal Protection Act.
Counsel, would you address the Combs case? Because hasn't the Supreme Court already upheld the constitutionality of the SOB fee in that case?
Your Honor, speaking of the TEA versus Combs case, which was about 10 years or so ago, when the TEA challenged the constitutionality of the SOB statute as written. An as written challenge is different than an as enforced challenge. The controller made the same argument in this case to the district court, and the district court said, no, this is an as enforced challenge. They're not
so
challenging.
So you're challenging the application of the statute now. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. Challenging the constitutionality of the controller's enforcement and the statute as applied and interpreted by the controller.
That answers my question. Thank you.
All right. Now, the case that the controller cites, it's a Westlaw case, Hager versus Mahindra. You read that case, what happened there, Mahindra, the taxpayer, filed a request for redetermination in 2013. In December 2016, the taxpayer made an additional or new argument that alleged a new basis, saying that, well, the taxpayer miscalculated the amount owed, and raised that as an argument. The hearing examiner, or the administrative law judge at SOA, rejected that argument, saying, no, you didn't present that in your original challenge, it's too late for you to do that. The taxpayer argued on appeal that he should have been allowed to do that under the protest payment Chapter 112 route. The Court of Appeals correctly ruled that that if your argument now is that you, the taxpayer, unilaterally miscalculated the tax, the way that you challenge the way that you seek a refund for tax payment that you incorrectly calculated to begin with is you go through the tax refund route, the administrative route. And I agree with that. That's not what we've done here. No, there is no argument that the amount of the tax that we paid was incorrectly calculated. The argument
there's no timeliness issue either. Really, it was a timeliness issue.
Right. And so that case really doesn't have anything to do with this. The equal protection argument that we made was timely made and articulated in the protest letter, which is all we have to do to invoke the jurisdiction.
Okay,
that's 14 really
minutes are up, and so you can continue. You have your remaining 6 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Kennedy, we'll hear from you, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The trial court correctly decided that it lacked jurisdiction for two independent reasons. First, there can't be a tax protest suit without something to protest. And second, there can't be discriminatory enforcement without some enforcement. Here, the uncontroverted evidence established the comptroller did not assess any taxes against the taxpayers, did not take any enforcement action against the taxpayers. For either of these two reasons, the court should affirm the trial court's dismissal.
So you heard my question regarding the statute and Mr. Bishop's answer saying that technically is the assessment. Why isn't it?
Well, that's not the assessment for a few reasons. The sexually oriented business statute applies the sexually oriented business fee broadly to any business that is a sexually oriented business that fits within the statutory definition. It does not say that LLC Inc. is a sexually oriented business. It does not say that Fund Holdings LLC is a sexually oriented business. It also doesn't say exactly how much either of these businesses pay. So what we have in this situation, and let me also, before I get into that, address the fact that throughout the tax code says the comptroller assesses taxes. It's used throughout the tax code. That's the language. The comptroller issues an assessment. The comptroller may assess. The comptroller. So in terms of an assessment, it's an action from a comptroller and a demand from the comptroller. And that's what the statute requires. It says that it must be the amount claimed by the state. Now, here, what we have is a situation where the taxpayer has unilaterally decided that they are a sexually oriented business and that they owe a certain amount of money. They filed a report.
Oh, wait, but counsel, isn't that a little disingenuous? If they are gentlemen's clubs and they advertise as such, and if they didn't pay anything, wouldn't you all be knocking on their door and saying, hey, you know, just like, you know, anybody who doesn't pay their taxes, you know, eventually the IRS will catch up with you or, you know, somebody will catch up with you. So, I mean, I'm just saying if they're obviously, I mean, doing that kind of business, wouldn't you all knock on their door if all of a sudden they send zero payments after a while?
Sure, that's likely to happen. If they are a sexually oriented business, they're doing business, hopefully, if the comptroller is enforcing it correctly, they're going to catch up to them and issue an assessment at some point. But here, what we have is the taxpayer staking out a position that they are and saying we had X number of dollars in fees, paying those, and then suing the comptroller just for receiving it, right? So the comptroller didn't go out there and examine the business and say, yes, you're a sexually oriented business. The comptroller didn't say, oh, you had X number of entries. So we don't know right now. I mean, we can assume based on the representation that they are, but the comptroller doesn't have any independent knowledge that during this period of time that they were operating as a sexually oriented business. Now, there have been businesses that are sexually oriented businesses that have switched their business model and have sued us saying, hey, we're no longer sexually oriented businesses. So this all gets to the point where the comptroller hasn't made an initial determination here yet. And that's what the statutory scheme requires in all instances. And that's a fair thing for the legislator to have required, right? So in a tax protest suit, what you want from the comptroller is either an audit or an examination of the taxpayer. If we audit or examine you, and then we say, hey, you're a sexually oriented business, you can pay the money under protest and sue the comptroller and say, no, we're not. In a tax refund suit, that's a situation where the taxpayer voluntarily pays the taxes at issue. And then the comptroller gets to determine through the administrative process whether or not they agree with that. And then at that point, if the comptroller disagrees, then the taxpayer can bring a suit, sue the comptroller and say, hey, you got this all wrong. But doing it that way, where the comptroller gets to make the initial determination, that makes sense. The comptroller has specialized expertise in the area of tax law. They get to develop a complete factual record. It promotes efficiency, just like in all other administrative cases. Disputes sometimes can get resolved more quickly. Many of these cases, if the comptroller agrees that they're not what they say they are, a lot of cases settle. Or it could persuade the losing party that the dispute's not worth pursuing. Now, there was some talk about the comptroller makes the ultimate decision in this case. So the ALJ makes it a proposal for the decision, and then the comptroller can change that decision if it likes. Well, that's the way the comptroller basically appeals the decision, right? So if the comptroller disagrees with the ALJ's decision, its only way to challenge that in district court is to change the decision and then let the taxpayer sue it. So this is all a way of saying this is just a normal administrative proceeding where the comptroller gets to make the first determination, like in all other administrative cases. But again, that doesn't foreclose them to getting into court. They just chose the wrong path into court. This should have been a tax refund suit. So in that case, they would have gone through the administrative process and they would ultimately come out. Either they would have prevailed, we would have agreed that they don't owe the taxes, or we would have disagreed and we would have been in district court properly. Now, the Mahindra case draws the distinction between the two. And it even says a person must pay the amount assessed, submit with the tax payment a protest and file suit within 90 days of the payment made. And it goes on to say that they agreed that because the comptroller did not demand payment based on apportionment, Mahindra is not really protesting the comptroller's assessment of its apportionment factor because it wasn't audited. So it's the exact same situation here. We haven't demanded any payment based on a sexually oriented business fees for this period from this taxpayer. It's the exact same situation. They should have gone through the refund channel and they decided to go through the tax protest channel.
But don't they have, even if the comptroller hasn't quote unquote assessed a tax, aren't the appellees still required to pay tax under the Business and Commerce Code?
Presuming that they are sexually oriented business, and yes, they would be required to pay under the Texas Business and Commerce Code, code. But being required to pay and by the Business and Commerce Code is a distinction between the comptroller actually taking some affirmative action to seek out that money from them. The comptroller under this scheme gets to make the first determination. It made no determination here. And so that's the distinction between those two issues. Now, sorry.
Well, I guess my question would be, okay, let's say they don't pay and then the agency does an investigation, does determine them to be a sexually oriented business. Then would then they be assessed a fine for not having recognized themselves as an SOB?
I believe they would, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But the point there would be, okay, if they want to protest this, but they want to avoid that, they can still pay and then ask for a refund from the comptroller under Chapter 111. There's a mechanism for them to still challenge those taxes. It's 104 of the tax code. You can ask the comptroller for a refund and go through the administrative process if that's the issue there. So you can avoid, even if there is a fine, you can avoid that by taking the other route, by taking the refund route. But this taxpayer elected to take the tax protest route, which was not appropriate in this circumstance because the comptroller had made no determination yet. Now, turning to my second point is that the taxpayer in this case does not actually contend that the tax or fee may not legally be collected. That one of the requirements from the tax code is they have to contend that the tax or fee is unlawful or that the comptroller may not legally demand or collect the tax or fee. And so here, the pleadings allege that the comptroller discriminatorily enforced the tax, the SOB fee statute against them. Now, so we've got to look at the elements of discriminatory enforcement because that's the allegation that they brought forth here. So the elements under jurisprudence under the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause, are singled out for enforcement while others similarly situated and committing the same acts were not. And the government purposefully discriminated based on the impermissible considerations such as race, religion, or desire to prevent the exercise of constitutional rights. Now here we have a situation where if we're going to accept the argument that the SOB fee statute itself is assessing the taxes, they haven't been singled out for enforcement. It applies broadly to everyone. The discriminatory enforcement requires some enforcement by the comptroller. So taxpayers in this case are in a catch-22. If they're correct on their first argument that it requires that the waiver of sovereign immunity requires only that the statute imposed taxes, Well, then their argument that this is discriminatory enforcement fails on its face. Because there was no, the uncontroverted evidence in this case established that there was no enforcement taken. There was no assessment. There was no audit, no jeopardy determination, no examination, no deficiency, no refund denial for the period at issue. So the comptroller hasn't taken any action that could be discriminatory in this case. And to the same effect, there's no discrimination because given the evidence in the record in this case, they've been treated the same exact way as the people that they allege weren't assessed. They weren't assessed either. So the fact that there's no assessment in this case doesn't mean that the tax or fee is unlawful. Now, we also have the development out of the Fifth Circuit where the claim fails as a matter of law now. So the Fifth Circuit said that these businesses are not similarly situated. And there's another distinction I want to point out in that TEA case. The TEA case was about the SOB fee rule, specifically the clothing rule. There's a rule that says that liquid latex and similar materials are not clothing. I don't think that that's the allegation here, that these clubs fall within that category. It's certainly not in the pleadings, but that's not what's at issue here. Regardless of that, though, the court held that even those bikini latex clubs that had entertainers wearing latex were not similarly situated to Hooters Twin Peaks and the other comparators that the taxpayers in this case have said that they're similarly situated to. So not only does it fail under the facts that it's unlawful, it fails under the law. It fails under the law for another reason too. Under the Equal Protection Clause, when there's a violation for discriminatory enforcement and things like that, the remedy is not to refund the taxpayer that legally owes the taxes. The refund is to give the state the opportunity to either level up or level down. So it's the comptroller's option in this case to either say, all right, fine, if the court finds that we discriminatorily enforced against certain businesses, it's our opportunity to decide to either enforce against those comparators or turn around and give a refund or turn around and not enforce against the taxpayer making the assertion. But it doesn't automatically result in a refund. And so there's a couple of other wrinkles to that argument that aren't necessarily, we didn't challenge the jurisdiction on the legal argument that it doesn't have any basis because we didn't have the Fifth Circuit opinion at that point. But I just wanted to point that out because there was some discussion about that earlier on. And so that's the distinction. And then I know there were a couple of points made about the comptroller was enjoined from enforcing the SOB fee statute. Again, that related to the clothing rule, not the statute itself. So it was a rule that was found unconstitutional. In this case, the only portion that is really applicable is the equal protection portion. And the equal protection portion of the Western District's decision was overturned by the Fifth Circuit. And so where we stand right now is the claim that was pleaded in this case, they've said, no, that doesn't work. That's not a valid equal protection claim. And so in terms of the federal courts, that's where we stand now. So then
you're saying that TEA case, we should apply it here. And because they rejected the fact that the equal protection claim, then we should reject it likewise here. Is that what you're saying, Mr. Kennedy?
That wasn't in our initial pleadings, but I think that you could get to that result from here. Yes. I think because it was the same pleaded, there may not be enough facts to actually get there pleaded in this petition, because as I said, that was limited to bikini latex clubs and whether or not they were similarly situated to Twin Peaks, Hooters, and businesses like that. They rejected that bikini latex clubs were similarly situated. It's unclear if this is a bikini latex club, a topless club, or a fully nude club based on the pleadings and the evidence in the record. So I'm not sure you could directly apply it, but I mean, I think that the closest to Hooters, Twin Peaks, et cetera, would be bikini latex clubs, and the Fifth Circuit's rejected that. So I think if you're going to apply the TEA case in this case, it comes out in our favor because the only issue from that case that is also an issue here is the equal protection issue. And that was overturned by the Fifth Circuit. So all of the other stuff on the rule on the First Amendment, the invalidity, that's not an issue in this case. So the fact that we lost on those other issues shouldn't play any impact. It shouldn't have any impact on this particular case, whether there's jurisdiction or not. And I want to make one other point that the Hager versus Sokolow case that was cited in appellant's brief, that's very distinguishable for a few reasons. That case was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction on appeal. The appellate court said it didn't have jurisdiction, so it didn't rule on any of these issues. It was also an appeal from a denial of a Rule 91A motion to dismiss. So it challenged the pleadings, not the facts. The comptroller conceded the businesses had pleaded some contentions that fell within the tax protest suit waiver. But the court decided that each of the contentions was not a separate cause of action. The other distinction is, in that case, the comptroller had issued an assessment. And so that's sort of not really on point to any of the issues in this suit. And again, so I return to my main point that, look, there was no assessment in this case by the comptroller. It took no action. The comptroller is entitled to make the first determination in these suits. That's what the legislature said when it used the plain language amount claimed by the state. And they must allege that the tax or fee is unlawful, which the evidence shows that it's not. And the evidence is uncontroverted here. So with that, unless the court has any additional questions, I'll yield the remainder of my time back to the court and ask that you affirm the trial court's judgment.
Thank you.
Any questions, justices? All right, thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you.
Mr. Bishop, you have your remaining 6 minutes.
All right, I'd like to make 4 points in response to what Mr. Kennedy just argued to the court. The protest payment statute says that a taxpayer has standing or the right to file a suit to recover a tax he's paid under protest if he is required to pay the tax under any law, which we are. We're required to pay it under the SOB statute, and that tax or any tax collected by the comptroller. There's nothing in the predicate that requires that there first be an assessment by the comptroller. The word assessment does not appear anywhere in section 112.051 or 052.
Well, actually, it does appear in 112.052 in part D. Interestingly, it says, you know, that taxpayer shall produce the records supporting any tax claim that has been assessed or collected or will be refunded. As required by 111.041. That's the only place I see the word assessed. So
right,
I'm surprised to find that there isn't already a case right on point with regard to this assessment issue. So,
I've been doing this for a couple of years. I've never seen this argument be made before. And I've handled a number of these cases. I've never seen this challenge brought before. The court also correctly observed that if we had not paid this tax, they would be knocking on the door. They would also, in addition to knocking, they'd be claiming interest and penalties and also potentially imposing a tax lien on our business. So that is what they would do if we had not paid the tax. The argument that, well, there has to be an action. There's no enforcement action because we haven't done anything. Well, the fact that they are collecting the tax from us and they are not collecting or seeking to collect the tax from similarly situated taxpayers, that is action. That's all. The fact that they're collecting or not collecting the tax is all that you need under the statute to assert the claim.
But Ms. Bishop, well, you are talking about places like Hooters and I have to confess, I've never been to any of those places, but I don't think they have nudity. I mean, they are scantily clad, but they are wearing clothes, are they not? I mean, I could see how they may not fall under this definition of nudity.
The definition of nudity under the SOB statute, in summary, says if there's any portion of the buttocks exposed or any cleavage exposed, and those places, including Hooters, Twin Peaks, they utilize girls wearing bikinis that expose their buttocks and they expose ample cleavage. Those businesses meet the definition of nude as defined by the statute. And for better or worse, the legislative definition of nude is very broad. Any exposure of the buttocks qualifies as nude, and it leads to absurd results. That's the problem. Now, one of the things that's frustrating about this is the controller's argument is basically a motion for summary judgment, Rule 91 motion to dismiss. You can't win your case on the merits, and therefore the trial court doesn't have jurisdiction. Well, that's exactly what they argued in the Hager-Sokolow case, which is, I've got a copy of the third court's opinion, which is Appendix D. They filed a Rule 91 motion to dismiss in response to our six arguments, one of which was the same argument that the SOB statute and fee as applied by the controller was unconstitutional. They filed a motion to dismiss and a plea to the jurisdiction, motion dismissed under Rule 91A, saying there is absolutely no factual or legal basis upon which we could prevail on that argument. The trial court denied their Rule 91 motion and their plea to the jurisdiction. They appealed that on an interlocutory basis to the Third Court of Appeals, and the Third Court of Appeals said, no, wait a minute. These are arguments why they are entitled to a refund under Chapter 112. Those arguments are legitimate arguments. If they're correct and they win on the merits of those arguments, they would be entitled to a full refund. And the trial court therefore has jurisdiction to determine whether or not they're going to win on the merits. And a Rule 91 motion is inappropriate at this time. And the trial court does in fact have jurisdiction. That case is directly on point. Now, Mr. Kennedy just told you that the controller had issued an assessment in the Sokolow case. I don't think that's correct. I'm not going to absolutely say he's wrong about that, but I don't think that's correct. I also represented Sokolow in that case, and I don't think there was assessment. Generally, when we challenge these, we do it through a protest payment. We don't wait to get hit with an assessment because of the taxes and penalties involved and the risk of a tax lien. There are examples where the controller has shut these businesses down after issuing a notice of tax due, and we can't risk that. And that's why we didn't go through the process of waiting for them to issue a notice of taxes due and the formal assessment process. We paid the tax under protest, set forth the reasons why we challenge the lawfulness of the controller collecting the tax from us under these circumstances. Now, the last thing I want to say is, it's interesting.
Time, Mr. Bishop, so quickly wrap it up. No, you can wrap it up, but just quickly, please.
All right, in the Sokolow case, he's arguing that the Fifth Circuit decision that undercuts their position on the merits on that case is not controlling at this point because the motion for rehearing hasn't been determined, so it's not a final ruling. In this case, he's making the argument that it is a final ruling. It's not a final ruling until the motion for rehearing is denied. Thank you.
Thank you.